Okay, so this random procedure has brought up my seventh thought first, and actually it's about pauses. I was thinking about the gaps in speech as being ones I always try to avoid, although I'm quite susceptible to them, I think, in this kind of situation particularly. But I think that there's a lot of significance to the times when you pause to take a breath, or times when you stumble over a word and or phrase and we have to repeat it, or when you start off and the sentence isn't correct and you go back and change it again, or you revise a thought, or just find yourself stuck. And it reminds me somehow or other of the shunting of trains on the train track, probably because I was thinking about my railroad trip down here from New York City. But I picture this being thought as a train, and it's shunted at a different track, but in a gigantic rail yard that is really huge. I do realize that some of these trains keep being shunted off into little sidings, and they go nowhere.
Okay,
the memory I had of the gaps in speech.
Being in Palo Alto, where my parents live,
I always
waking up jet-lagged well before daybreak,
in this kind of
and there's a Caltrain that goes nearby, commuting between Gilroy and San Francisco.
There's a lot of,
and I could hear the whistle of the train.
Significant.
And as I was sort of lying there in bed, I tried to imagine
pause to take a breath, or
everyone else who might be listening to the same sound at the
same
moment,
repeat it.
So I had the idea of maybe
off in the sentence. Software engineer up for an early shift,
change it again, or you revise a thought, or
looking blankly out of
just find
dark window
while he's waiting for the coffee.
It reminds me somehow of the shunting of trains.
I also pictured, probably because I was thinking about
perhaps an infant
railroad trip down here
in
New York City.
Her parents' bed between
this being mom and dad, and
thought as a train
stirring slightly in her sleep,
shunted at a different track, but in
with the sound of that
rail yard
whistle, and then maybe nudging
the
parent,
mother, let's say,
who also stirs slightly, but
doesn't quite surface to wakefulness.
And just a little side.
I also pictured a very old woman, maybe in a nursing home, who's used to insomnia, and the sound of the train whistle brings back memories of really much earlier adventures in a very different time, in a different country even. Well, when I scheduled this,
the third errand,
I realized that the day we ended up choosing was April Fool's Day.
I don't have any tricks up my sleeve,
and I'm assuming this whole setup
being in Palo Alto,
where my parents live,
on their part,
waking up
just
jet-lagged
well before
daybreak.
And there's a calendar.
When I think about April Fool's Day, I guess I remember mostly my own childhood.
There's
a time of
great excitement on the one hand, and slight anxiety,
or even considerable anxiety,
because you wanted both the excitement of
pulling something off on somebody else,
but
the anxiety of being made a fool of.
So I had
and the only trick I can remember
software engineer
devising myself for some reason
is
this one, where I
looking blankly
take a plastic cup and fill it with water, and I'd prop it on top of a door, which I'd leave slightly ajar.
This
would be, I think, the bedroom. The door of the bedroom that I shared with my brother's
head.
And I remember being inside the bedroom and
stirring
slightly
in her sleep,
and sort of the anxiety of having my older brother come bursting through the door and having to spare on him. And the funny thing is, I was thinking about this, is that I never, I don't remember what happened, I just remember being suspenseful about that, both excited and anxious.
A very old woman.
And so in a way, that water is still propped up there,
sound
of
the train whistle
forever.
Brings back memories of really much earlier adventures in a very different time, in a different country.
Well, when I scheduled this
third
errand, for a while now, I've had this notion of what I call L-shaped imaginings.
It's a memory
I think of that as an L of a knight's move in chess, where you go two up and one over,
or
peering around a corner, daybreak, as if you could look out a door and peer around a corner.
When I think about April Fool's Day,
because the idea of seeing something or moving someplace at one remove from your past
time of hear the you know, great excitement,
and it's a kind of a slight anxiety or exercise of the heart as much as the mind.
Pulling something off on somebody else,
exercise for me is passion.
Anxiety being made a fool of.
So, for example,
and the only trick I can remember,
for example, might meet some cutthroat banker or investment banker, art opening or something, impulsed by it.
Cup
and fill it with what they may stand for, even how they act. I then imagine him tucking in his young daughter at night,
the bedroom,
pulling up the sheets,
the bedroom that I shared,
kissing her on the forehead, maybe pausing in the bedroom door as he leaves, turning off the light,
and sort of the anxiety of having my old
or I might imagine some person through the door, brittle, embittered woman who I might encounter as a clerk somewhere,
that I never,
bureaucratic reason.
I remember what happened. I just remember being
thinking that perhaps she has a dog, and I picture that as
an anxious, very old woman,
and kind of lap dog that I myself don't particularly care for, like big hounds. But I then picture her with her dog, and I picture her hand, warm hand on the warm head and ears of that dog. And you know how when you happen to hit the right spot in rubbing an animal, a dog or a cat, their eyes kind of melt. So I picture that happening, and I picture her eyes melting too.
Well, when I scheduled this on the third errand,
this fifth thought, this notion of what it would be better off as a film sequence, maybe. It would be a point of view, handheld shot, roughly approximating my experience the other day as I was walking between walking home and I was on 125th Street, 123rd Street, and 122nd, or 121st and 122nd, I should say.
And it's a kind of a.
And I saw a man in front of me who kind of went off to the side
of the mind
and pressed up against the window of a store. And I couldn't tell whether he was propping something there to read it or whether he was trying to clear through the shadows to see or reflections to see inside the store. So when he, by the time I got to the same spot, he'd moved well down the road. And so I looked in.
His young daughter at night.
And I saw a hairdressing salon with a single customer in there, and the hairdresser had pulled her hair, which is very long, up into
a
long vertical ponytail, which looked peculiar to me. And I saw the mirror that the woman was facing, and she was gazing at herself in the mirror. And as I was walking away, I was thinking about the four glances that I was that I just apprehended. And I was thinking about that in time lapse, how many glances there'd be in that one spot.
Her hand. Warm hand on the warm head and ears of that dog. And you know how when you happen to hit the right spot in rubbing an animal, a dog or a cat, their eyes kind of melt. So I picture that happening, and I picture her eyes melting too. Well, when I scheduled this on the third errand,
this fifth thought, notion of what it would be better off as a film sequence, maybe. A long time ago, when I was a college student, this peculiar idea about a spatialized book, a new way of kind of thinking about the organization or even the meaning of a book. The idea came to me when I was either reading a book or writing a notebook where you're writing on one side of the page, you'd see a word from the other side of the page coming through, and I started wondering if there should be almost significance to that connection.
Window of a store,
almost as if
I couldn't tell whether
there'd be a sequencing, not only from the recto verso of a page, but even all the way through the book. So let's say the upper right-hand zone of a page would somehow relate to all the others and corresponding through the book as a kind of
with a single customer in there, and
spatial syntax, of sequence,
hair,
or
very long, up
or theme, or something like that.
Vertical ponytail.
It's not anything I ever developed, this idea. I have no idea if it would work.
And as I was walking away, I was thinking about the four glances that I was that I just apprehended. And I was thinking about that in time lapse, how many glances there'd be in that one spot.
Her hand.
Warm hand on the warm head and ears of that dog. And you know how when you happen to hit the right spot in rubbing an animal, a dog or a cat, their eyes kind of melt. So I picture that happening, and I picture her eyes melting too. This is going originally, this is my 10th thought, my last thought. It had to do with voices in your head, which is what I'm experiencing right now. Oh, I hadn't thought about it ago. I had this thought. But for a while now, I've had this idea of what I call the mental economy of voices. So where you don't, at least I'm speaking of myself, I have these internal conversations where I have different kinds of minds I'm thinking about or talking to each other, so to speak. Not in dialogue, but somehow communicating. And I'm watching that on the other side, taking part in this discussion.
I wonder if there should be
a conversation, by the way, that isn't necessarily always agreeable. So it's disputes between opposing voices.
Recto verso.
And one of those voices, for many years since I was a teenager and first read Silence, has been John Cage's, with whom I often argue as well. But here I find myself today through the book as a kind of inside one of his last mechanisms of spatial syntax,
sequence.
And I was thinking about what I would do differently.
Vertical ponytail.
The only difference I think I would make was to somehow have the same simultaneity of ideas and stories, but the ability to hear each one of them distinctly at any time. So perhaps each idea would have its own speaker in a larger space you could move in. And as you approached one speaker, you could hear that voice, that recording. And when you went back to the center, you could hear them all mixed the way they are in this recording.
So picture that happening, I picture her eyes melting too.
This is going originally.
The last couple of years, I've been reading.
It had to do with voices.
When you translated English, I'm being
translated
right now.
Jean Amré.
Oh, I hadn't thought about it.
Who's best known for his book he wrote? But for a while now, I've been tortured in World War II.
Mental economy of voices. So where you don't.
But who wrote almost as I'm speaking myself?
Equally agonizing books about old age.
Different kinds of minds I'm thinking about.
And in one of those books, he says the following thing. He says, no one can become what he can't find in his memories discussion. And he goes on to say that if you, and a conversation, by the way, what you experience in the first years of your life determine the possibilities of you as a human being. And even if you can't remember those times, and one of those
where your range of possibilities
many years since I was a teenager,
might be
read Silence, has been John Cage.
I don't actually know if I agree with us or not.
But here I find
although I noticed that in my own work, inside my own thinking, I often go back to games and experiences of childhood to trigger
what I'm now doing,
what I would do differently in my writing or my artwork.
For my mechanism, the only difference
I see this is almost a kind of folding over.
So you have the same an earlier time, and the later one is folded over.
This came with this interesting idea of an accordion-like self over the years.
So perhaps
layers.
Each idea would have its own speaker in a larger space you could move in. And as you approached one speaker, you could hear that voice, that recording. And when you went back to the center, you could hear them all mixed the way they are in this recording.
This is going originally.
The last couple of years, I've been reading.
I'm sometimes get voices frustrated by the fact that there's so many
John Amré
empty stretches in my life
where
it's best
known
for
his.
Where I'll go through
a while,
a day or stretch of days.
I'll have all these experiences that don't seem to add up.
But who wrote almost
they don't resolve into equally agonizing books about
picture or an idea or an epiphany or.
And in one
much
of them,
it's made a blur.
It says the following thing. It says,
and like,
no one can become what he can't
would
find.
Would prefer that they all resolve haiku-like.
It goes on to say that
perfect moments.
And a conversation.
And I imagine
what you've heard in the first years of your life,
always
more present they would.
I often, even frustrated in my attempts to keep a diary of possibilities, by always falling behind.
So I noticed that when I
don't know, I do focus on
how I do these stretches.
And think about it,
although I don't have to write
it in my own work,
inside
it can form something
to the structure usually.
Again, it's very unusual in childhood to
trigger what I'm now doing.
What puts me off is the futility of it in my writing.
As soon as I've devoted this time to the one,
I see this as almost a memory kind of folding,
experience
of
pieces together
of all the other ones are rushing past unrecorded.
The later one is folded over.
this came with this interesting idea of an accordion-like self over the years.
So perhaps layers, each idea would have its own speaker in a larger space you could move in. And as you approached one speaker, you could hear that voice, that recording. And when you went back to the center, you could hear them all mixed the way they are in this recording.
The fourth idea I want to talk about today has to do with an ongoing project of mine called Other Bodies. And the idea here is to try to have as best for me to try thinking myself into the experience of being in a very different kind of body from my own.
I have all these experiences that don't seem
so, for example, and you start from your own body and doing this. So, for example, we have vestigial tailbone. And in one of the bottom of our spine. I first might imagine myself as the body of a dog. And it's quite easy to do that. I think it's almost moments. It's very simple for a human being to imagine a tail wagging happiness. I often am frustrated. And then you can think of a more attempts to keep your whole tail, like that of a monkey. By always falling behind, more powerful, more purposeful, you swinging through the trees.
I do focus on me
really up in the jungle of Canada.
I don't have to write
it down. More difficult is to think your way into the bodies of creatures very different from yours.
What puts me off is the futility.
So, for example, a scorpion. A scorpion which stings with its tail, kills its prey with its tail. All the other ones is a much harder thing for me to imagine being and doing.
This interesting idea of an accordion-like self over the years. So perhaps layers. Each idea would have its own speaker in a larger space you could move in. And as you approached one speaker, you could hear that voice, that recording. When you went back to the center, you could hear them all mixed the way they are in this recording.